Hello and welcome to the USEA's official podcast. My guest today is Robert Kellerhaus, who's the organiser's representative to the FEI Eventing Committee, and he's going to explain the new ruling on rider qualifications and the minimum eligibility. Now, Robert, I know that you've been keeping well up to date with this. What is the current status of it?
So this is the first year that the rider categorization slash rider licensing has been introduced by the FEI. And there were some general issues with respect to specific situations that have arisen naturally from the creation of this system that allows for more experienced riders to gain qualification advantages and riding catch riding horses at different level events. So we've been, when the sport went this direction, it was done so through a lot of correspondence with all of the world's national federations for eventing. And from a macro point of view, the sport basically asked the question, for rider safety, is it better for less experienced riders to qualify as a pair with their mount? And, you know, there was unanimous agreement that people thought that that was better. And was there an even further reason for people with more experiences to gain an advantage of going up the levels faster than the rest of us? And the unanimous opinion was yes. So we tried to address those two very general top-down philosophies in the form of rules. And when you start creating a box or a set of rules, inevitably there'll be people who are outside of this box that are being adversely impacted as a result of the creation of this. And so the FEI currently is receiving some of these items of concern, and they're trying to deal with it as best they can in light of still trying to keep the philosophy of more experienced riders now actually have a faster road to move up the levels. No doubt about it, they have less shows than they ever had to do if that's their choice. And if that's their national federation's agreement. Less experienced riders have virtually the same number of shows they have to do, only with a very big distinction that they have to do so as a pair. So in the past, anyone who's competed at a particular level once in their life and achieved a qualifying result was good to stay there for the next 2.5 years, regardless of the qualified mount they were riding, which is a distinct separation from what it used to be. And that's catching people out that are currently in the gray area of being an experienced rider, but not having enough experiences around cross-country courses at certain star levels to be categorized. So there are specific instances that I could think of that I won't mention, but they are obvious. And you look at them and you're like, clearly that person's experienced and they would be fine as a pair with their mount. But generally speaking, the enforcement of the categorized rider, the allowance of categorized riders to move up the levels quicker, and the realization that less experienced riders will have to ride as a pair with their mount before advancing to levels is something that is a philosophy that won't be departed from by the FEI anytime soon.
So let's take some hypothetical scenarios then, so to make it clear, because if you are, say, a beginner novice, a young rider, someone at the lower levels, and you buy a proven four-star horse to take you to that badminton or Rolex of your dreams, and that horse's proven track record, and you've competed at one-star level, you've got as far as one-star level, say, you then have to do what to get a cat? Where would your categorization fall?
Well, if the person's, I'll go address that answer for you. And number one, the one-star rider would continue to have to stay at one star. So they would have to qualify as a pair with their mount, but the first level you qualify at is one star. So needless to say, if they'd only done one-star level, they would go back to one star, even with their four-star horse, even with the old rules. But what gets tricky is you get somebody who's represented the United States in Olympic Games, for an example. And they've ridden several horses up to four-star level in their lives. and yet they just haven't competed in enough 3- and 4-star events to be a categorized rider at the A or B level. So they bought that 4-star horse that they'd only done, let's say, a handful of 3 stars in the last 8 years. They would be somebody who would have to qualify as a pair with their mount. At whatever, if it's a 4-star horse and they were experienced 4-star rider but not having enough goes to be considered categorized, they would have to qualify with that horse currently at whatever level they were categorized at. And if they were uncategorized, they would have to go start from 1-star. And that's where the items of concern lie the most, drastic concern. And so we're trying to address the specific cases of somebody who's 4-star experienced rider, but doesn't have enough goes collectively to be considered categorized. What do we do with that very big gray area that exists between that person and the person who's like me, who would be coming up the levels, that should darn well do every single level along the way? And
when you say have enough goes collectively, over what time frame is that, Robert? What is sign of scheduling are we looking at for these categorizations and therefore then the new qualification?
So in order to be a categorized rider, you have to do 15 goes at any particular star level or above and in the past 8 years.
Okay.
So if you have done 10 1-star, 5 2-star, and 3 stars, you're actually a category D rider because you have a total of 18 goes, of which you've only done 5 at the 2-star level. Once you've achieved 15 goes at the 2-star level total in the past 8 years, you'd be a category C, and 15 at the 3-star level, a category B. And then once you do 5 at the 4-star level, which is a distinct difference, you're category A, so long as you have at least 15 3-star goes. There's actually people out there in the world who have 5 4-star goes and like 7 3-star goes. So they're actually not even categorized. So there's interesting nuance come from the rules. But what the sport was trying to do is come up with a line that is was basically formulated around somebody who's competed at a particular star level, whether it be CIC or CCI. And is that rule perfect? Is it somehow, you know, going to have somebody with 14 goes is, you know, horrible compared to the person who's 16 goes? No, of course not. It's that box that we've created that is causing some serious issues amongst riders who are on the edge of the box or outside of the box.
So I'm an Olympic rider. I've done 5 or 6 or 7 or 10 4-stars. But I've only done 14 3-stars, and I've just now got a new ride, which is an Olympic horse that's competed on another team for another country. And so where am I going to be then? I've got to go back to 3-star with that horse to get my 15 3-stars before I can do Rolex?
No, not to be further confusing, but if you did 10 or 11 4-stars and 14 3-stars on your category B, you'd actually have 25 qualified rides. So you would be a B categorized rider at that point. So if you bought Michael Young's horse from him, you'd have to start at the 3-star level.
How many 3-stars would I have to do before I could go up, back up to 4-star with this 4-star horse?
You would if you've done your 10 4-stars and your 14 3-stars, I stand corrected, you'd actually be a category A rider. You'd be pretty much like Lloyd Martin, so my apologies. You would start off at 4-star level with that horse. The interesting circumstance you bring up is somebody who has not achieved 15 total goes at 3-star or above.
Right.
So their total at 3-star and above falls below 15. And that number was actually initially set to be 20. Everyone's going to say, how'd you guys get this number? It seems rather arbitrary. They studied. The FEI ran reports on over and over and over again, and Giuseppe Della Chiesa, our chairman, studied with national federations and different rider groups these goes to establish a rider licensing. So it was arbitrary in the sense that there's no exact science to choosing 20 or 15. It's just trying to create some bar that establishes somebody good enough to go buy a horse at that star level. The complications lie in the people, again, who are almost there or have competed so many times, but they just don't happen to have enough goes to be categorized. That's where the serious situation lies. No one's necessarily questioning whether there's a good, well, there's probably some people questioning it, but no one on the FEI committee and many of the national federations are questioning that it's not a good thing to qualify as a pair when you're learning the sport of eventing, and that it's not a healthy thing to be riding at a level that you and your mount are comfortable doing together. Where the question really lies is, at how many goes do we determine someone to be a quote-unquote experienced rider? And is that number of goes, is it truly collecting everybody that's worthy? Or there are some people that are still gaining experience that are still licensed. You know, it's a thing brings up a lot of questions, which is what happens anytime you try to create a box, like a set of rules, what rider licensing is doing.
Let me put this to you, though, Robert. Would this maybe something that would apply more to the lower levels, the 1 and 2 star riders, to make sure that they've consolidated in their experience before they move up to 3 and 4 star? Would that not apply more to that group than to the 3 and 4 star riders?
No, really, experience is experience in the sport. It's the way it's looked at, if I'm understanding you correctly. But what's important to know is that the unlicensed rider faces the exact same number of international competitions in order to move up that they used to. What's become, what's added an extra layer of complication is in the past 4 years, riders used to be able to substitute one of their international 2-star CIC goes for an advanced horse trials. And any reference to national competitions and the international rider qualification structure has been removed. So what it makes it look like in the rules to the average person is that we've added in an extra CIC 2-star, when in fact the total number of goes you have to do is exactly the same. And for that reason, coupled with the fact that there's a lot of data to support riders going as a pair as being better qualified as riders who don't go as a pair that are less experienced, made it seem like there was a fairly, with respect to the vast majority of riders, a fairly inconsequential addition of this rider licensing, which in reality benefits the most experienced riders by giving them actually less goes to have to do. So, and the most experienced riders, the ones who are categorized, they actually have an easier road to go than they ever have before. And so although there is a lot of outrage and concern over the new rider licensing and the number of goes you have to go and be licensed, and if you're not licensed, how many goes are you going to make us do at a lower level before you allow us to move up? Those are the areas that are being discussed. But in terms of what the rules are effectively doing, and so the people who are coming up, nothing's really changed. And for the people who are very experienced, they actually have less goes to do in order to get their mount up the levels.
So, and what now is being done to address these issues as you get into the trenches at the start of the season and people are realizing how it's impacting them and they're maybe a new partner? What is being done, and what do you see the time frame as to implementing it? Because rules so often take time to actually come into force, don't they?
Well, yeah, that's a great point. And this is actually part of the concern with this new rule and why the FEI chose to go ahead with it in 2013. Rather than delaying to 2014. Because anytime you implement a new rule, even if people have had a year to talk about it, which they have actually had a year and a half to talk about it, it's just that these different iterations of rules and thought processes have been coming down from the FEI to the national federations, back to the FEI, since 2011. And we've been getting this feedback and adjusting the actual rules that currently sit in front of us. So there's already been a fairly significant process of negotiations and trying to find the right spot. And so now that people are in the midst of a year where the rules apply to them, a whole lot of people are paying more attention to it, and the people who are being negatively impacted by it are seriously concerned, and the complications involved in some of these, like you say, down the trenches details, are having to be addressed. And the FBI's meeting in the beginning of March, as we will again in July and in August, to discuss the rules and get the feedback that we've already received from the riders, the national federations. We'll take that into account. We'll see what's going to happen with respect to any adjustments to the rules, what could be done to alleviate some of the areas of concern, and then move forward from there.
So you don't see anything really changing then in time in term for the spring season?
No, no. 2013 is 2013. I think that the, but the idea of bringing these rules along, anything major happens immediately following a quadrennial cycle, because there's, even though there's no great time to implement new rules, you certainly don't want to do that the year of a championship like the World Equestrian Games in Normandy next year. And you don't want to do that in advance of the year of the Olympics or any time you're during an Olympic qualification cycle. So the only time to really do the move is after an Olympic year. And so the unfortunate situations for some that are trying to be addressed will be on ice for 2013.
So we can find out more of this online then, can we, at the FEI website, Robert?
If you read the FEI rules, it is actually fairly clear, at least to me, but of course I've been sitting around hearing about the rules discussed for literally like 36 hours or more. But I do believe it's fairly explanatory once you go to the FEI rules and check out how the rider, licensed rider, achieves a new level and how an uncategorized rider achieves a new level. The U.S. Federation is also very actively trying to disseminate the correct information to its riders. So if riders have a question about what their particular situation is, that the USEA, which was Sharon Gallagher and the USEF with Sheila Costello, have been fantastic in getting these riders the information they need.
Okay, well, plenty of resources then. And Robert, maybe you can come back on as the year comes to an end and let us know how these new meetings, have, if they make any changes, you can bring us up to date.
I absolutely be happy to do that, Chris. And we'll be coming back in March. And then there'll be another round of information disseminated to national federations. And we should have, again, if there are changes in the horizon, a better understanding of what those will be at that time or sometime during 2013.
Terrific. Well, thank you very much indeed for explaining this to us, Robert. Really appreciate it.
You got it, Chris.
And you can find out more about the rules at the FEI's website. That's fei.org. Or at the USEF website at usef.org, or follow the links on the USEA website at useventing.com. I'm Chris Stafford, and I'll be bringing you regular news and interviews here on the USEA's official podcast. Please join us on iTunes. Just look for the USEA podcast, and here online at usea.podbean.com.